So Governor-elect Chris Sununu, thank you for coming in. Welcome.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on. It's been an exciting week.
I imagine so. A lot of things to happen between now and January. I want to start with one of the first decisions that you made since the election, and it has to do with your transition team. You named Jamie Burnett, a registered lobbyist here in New Hampshire, as co-director of your transition team. Now, he's also a partner at your brother's lobbying firm, Profile Strategy Group. Are you worried at all about there being, you know, perceptions for a potential conflict of interest?
No, absolutely not. I mean, Jamie's been a longtime friend and confidant. He understands not just the politics of what happens in Concord, but I think he understands my philosophies, what we're looking for in terms of building a great team. I have immense respect for him and his decision making. He's an ideal candidate to be on the transition team.
But in talking about perceptions, I mean, what kind of firewall will be in place when it comes to your family's financial interests? I know you're stepping down from Waterville Valley.
Yeah,
but
Jamie
works
with my brothers at Profile Strategy. Mm-hmm. My brothers are not lobbyists. Please understand.
They're not registered lobbyists.
No, not at all.
Okay.
So, Jamie's part of the transition team. Whether he comes on board full time or anything down the road, that's always a possibility. But mm-hmm. This is a transition period. It's about kind of going to your advisory team and helping you design the best team going forward for the state and our administration moving forward.
A potential role for him going into the administration?
I would love to have him involved. I'd love to have someone like Jamie involved, sure. But I don't know if we haven't discussed that. But that would be great. Look, we have great people in the state. We have great talent in this state. And so bringing forth anybody I can as part of the transition team to go and tap that talent, find out what we can do, and across the aisle, too. It's not just about Republicans. It's Democrats. It's independents. It's all different kinds of political ideas, backgrounds, business, education, really putting the best and the brightest forward for the state of New Hampshire. That's what our campaign was about, and that's what we're going to drive forward on.
You've said addressing the opioid crisis will be your first priority come January. Along with the budget, obviously. Well, one component of the fighting the crisis will be making a decision about the future of Medicaid expansion, which includes coverage for drug addiction treatment. Of course, the election of Donald Trump will certainly, you know, affect the direction of that program going forward. But either way, you now have some 50,000 low-income Granite Staters enrolled. So what happens to those folks?
Well, again, it's, you know, contrary to the campaign rhetoric of the Democrats the whole time, the idea that we're going to cut people off the rolls and everyone's losing, that's all nonsense. It's absolute nonsense. The beauty of what we're seeing in Washington, D.C., and what we're going to bring to the table here in New Hampshire is the idea that we're going to be able to have more flexibility in our state to design programs and needs to fit the needs of our constituents. We have a substance abuse issue here. We have an aging population. These are very different dynamics than what other parts of the country are seeing. And, you know, the idea that this all was going to be made permanent and we're going to kind of lock ourselves out from having flexibility and control, the current administration in Washington has made it very clear. They are going to allow states to design their own programs. They're going to allow states to get rid of a lot of the bureaucracy and regulations that just tie us up and eat up a lot of the money that should be put into programming. So the opportunity is incredible. We've never had opportunity like this before in terms of allowing the states to design their own programs. It's exactly what we're going to do and exactly why putting the right team in place is so important.
But in lieu of that program, in the meantime, while you're coming up with some of these new ideas and these new programs, what happens to those 50,000 folks should the program end, the federal program end?
Well, the federal program doesn't end on the day I get inaugurated. The federal program
is going
to continue on.
Going forward, obviously, in the next 2, 3, 4 years down the road. I mean,
we'll have to see what comes out, what really the structure is that comes out of both Washington and the ability for us to design our program and working with the right people over the next 3, 4, 5 months in designing a system that works for us. It's just, I mean, people in the state should be incredibly excited about what can happen, excited about the ability to put more money into the programs that we need, get rid of the bureaucracy and regulation that just tie us up.
What about some of those programs? What are some of those programs?
Well, look, substance abuse is a big one. There's no doubt that one of the great benefits of Medicaid expansion is that we were able to help so many more people who had substance abuse issues, making sure that we have the different types of recovery. I mean, everyone goes through recovery in a different way. Some need inpatient treatment. Some need peer-to-peer. There's a lot of programs in the state that get no money right now, get no federal funding or state funding, but have had successes on their own. I think we need to champion a lot of those programs, and there could be some ability for that. We talked about having a more aging population here in the state. Some people think that is a negative. It's not negative at all. It's just a different dynamic that might present challenges and a different dynamic. But we, by having the the ability to design systems and look into, let's say, a more home health care. I'm a big believer in home health care, getting more nurses in here, getting a pay increase for those folks, because there is a better quality of life when you're getting long-term care at home as opposed to in a nursing facility or institution, which is sometimes necessary, of course. But for some of those folks who we can provide more flexibility in their lives to make better decisions for themselves, that's always going to be a net benefit for everybody.
Flexibility sounds great. It all comes down to funding, of course. Looking at budget priorities, you've talked about a number of things, the need to improve infrastructure, increase funding for substance abuse, wanting to incentivize full-day kindergarten, for instance. How do you plan to set those priorities, and where do you find the money to pay for them?
Those are a lot of the priorities that you just named right there. In terms of finding the money, two things. We've put together a very responsible budget 2 years ago. Senator Morse, Speaker Jasper put together a great budget. And we know, you know, it got vetoed and eventually came into play a few months after that veto. But it really, the fruits of it bore out. I mean, the fact that we have a little bit of extra money, I don't anticipate there being as big of a surplus as everyone talks about, because we have such very large liabilities in the pension system's health care and some uncompensated care to the hospitals that do have to get paid out. But we have a little flexibility in the budget right now. We've reinstilled the rainy day fund, which is great. If we keep building responsible budgets and we actually, again, start driving business back into this state, we drive a stronger workforce into this state, that's an organic, natural, and more sustainable way of building those tax revenues, if you will. You don't increase tax revenues by increasing taxes. That's the myth. You do it by building up businesses and building up your economy so the entire system just works for the benefit of everyone.
Well, there's a lot to talk about there as far as business taxes and business goes. I want to ask you about a pledge that you made to fully fund the state's so-called alcohol fund, which is supposed to set aside 5% of revenue from alcohol sales for drug and alcohol abuse treatment.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if the question is, should we fully fund it?
Yeah.
You bet we should. You know, something came to my attention in the past couple of weeks is, did we even spend all the money? It was partially funded, but did we actually even spend all the money that was there? So that's something I want to look into, find out if it was really spent, because it should be funded and it should be spent. I mean, these are dollars that need to be there. But you got to get rid of the politics. And there, look, let's cut to the chase. There is politics at play here, unfortunately, with a lot of the substance abuse stuff we see that in Concord.
In what way?
I think there's been a little bit of a power vacuum, if you will. I think there are some organizations involved that are very good at certain things, maybe aren't experts in others, but have really kind of encompassed a lot of the decision-making processes. I want to make sure that, for example, if we're talking about recovery, you know who I want making those decisions? Those folks who have gone through recovery, those folks that are in recovery, those folks that run recovery centers, not bureaucrats, right? It's not that we've made bad decisions, but I don't think we've brought necessarily the folks on the front lines of these issues, the stakeholders, to have a real say in where we're going to go forward. Those are the types of, I guess I classify it as politics, but that's the type of input that we need to start listening to in this state. Find those who have been there and done that to make sure we're making the best decisions going forward.
And you say, well, we are not doing that. I know early on in the campaign, you were critical of Governor Hassan and about some of the initiatives that she was talking about.
Well, look
about
at her first drug czar. I mean, I'm not here to bash Governor Hassan, but people know I was very critical of her first drug czar because he wasn't on the front lines of these issues. He didn't reach out to people. He didn't talk to people.
But specifically,
and it was a great example of what didn't work.
What should be done? What will you do come January?
I'll reach out. Let's just take this. For example, we have a drug czar right now. First of all, I hate the term czar, but that's okay. And James Vera, I think, has done a pretty darn good job, and I look forward to working with him. I think we need to start also putting in just as much on the drug side of this as the recovery side of this. I think we need a governor's recovery advisor, if you will, and a team of those who have been through recovery, who understand the different aspects of recovery, what works and what doesn't, and put as much emphasis there as we do on the drug side. It's such a large and encompassing issue that to expect one person to manage the whole thing, sometimes I think the focus, you can only set your so many, one person can only set so many priorities, so to say. So I think we need to kind of divide and conquer a little bit. I've talked a lot about aggressive prevention programs in schools. So let's bring some of the educators in, some of the parents into the discussion about what those programs should actually look like. Not just the bureaucrats in Concord, but those who are going to actually benefit from these programs. Let's get their input in helping design the system that's going to help themselves.
There were cuts made to the business enterprise tax and the business profits tax in the last budget. Now, with more reductions that are set to come, do you see further rate cuts being part of your budget?
I would love to see it. I really would.
How do you do that?
You cut the rates.
How do you pay for it? I mean,
look, by cutting the rates, you can entice more business to come across the borders, which again can increase your tax base. See, by breaking down regulation and by lowering taxes, you can actually increase your tax base because you're creating a state that says we're open for business. You start becoming competitive to states like Massachusetts, or even like Maine and even Vermont now. I mean, they've been very competitive with business.
Presumably, that'll take some time, obviously. And how do you in a 2-year budget make that work?
Well, there's always going to be a bit of a lag time there. So the good news is it's not like we have a massive budget deficit that we have to fill. We're comfortable with our budget now. It's about growing it. And then as you grow it, making sure that those new dollars that are coming in are being prioritized to what the state's needs are. Maybe it's infrastructure. Maybe it's drug recovery. Maybe it's healthcare. These are the things we have to focus on. So we're in good shape, but we just have so much untapped potential out of our economy and our programmatic state here in New Hampshire that I think we just need to really tap into and focus on.
There was, of course, controversy during the campaign over the $36 million Dartmouth-Hitchcock contract to run the state psychiatric mm-hmm. hospital. You had said the contract should be rescinded and rebid. Is there any evidence to show that the layoffs at Dartmouth-Hitchcock have had an impact at the hospital? You know, was that just a campaign issue? What happens going
forward?
Well,
layoffs are real. I mean, there are a lot of people without jobs now. The fact that we weren't told about these until a day after we approved the contract, that's real. See, the issues that came up during the campaign, it wasn't campaign rhetoric. These were facts. And these were facts, the fact that we only had one bidder, the fact that you had all these layoffs being announced after the contract was approved, the unfortunate suicide that we had after a woman had gone into the hospital and said that she was considering suicide and then unfortunately took her own life. These are things that have to be looked at and investigated. What's going on with the employment practices? What's going on with the financial situation of that organization? Are they going to have long-term impacts because they've had some financial troubles? You have to investigate all of these things, and we're going to do that.
Realistically, what happens with that contract going forward?
Well, it is a little difficult. I mean, the contract actually came into effect, I believe, November 1st. So we're actually in the new contract. Mm-hmm. It would have been a lot easier to do this when I was calling for it.
It's not possible legally to rescind it at this point.
I don't know about that. Yeah, it would be, I don't, you, unless there was something within the contract, I'd have to go back and look at the details of the contract. It wouldn't be very easy, I'll tell you that. It's all about finding new choice, though. And again, providing maybe more options the next time we come around, investigating these issues. And then it's not just about investigating for punitive reasons. You want to investigate these issues so you can learn, right? You need to learn what worked, what didn't. Why did this happen? Where was the breakdown in communication? Where was the breakdown in programming? At the end of the day, people have to understand this is all about just getting better services for the people of the state. That's all I care about. I mean, all the political nonsense and the campaign rhetoric that was thrown against me, I throw all that right out the window. I care about nothing about ensuring top-quality mental health services for the people of our state. They have not had them yet. We do have a mental health crisis in this state that is undeniable. So it is a top priority, and sometimes it makes, you know, making tough decisions, asking for some tough answers, and people, you know, looking into themselves and their organizations looking into themselves and saying, how can we do this better?
On abortion, you've talked about supporting Women's Health Protections Act here in the state. What would that look like?
The Women's Health Protection Act in mm-hmm. particular? That's an act that I believe very strongly in.
That's something some other states
have. I simply want to make sure that women, no matter where they go and what procedure they're getting at a health care provider in the state, that there is a basic level of care provided across the board. They don't have that right now. I think that's wrong. I think that's wrong. We need to ensure that wherever a woman is getting health services, that they have the same level of care across the board. I just think that's a no-brainer for me. And so, yeah, I think we need
critics to critics would point to states like Texas that have instituted things like that and saying this limits access to abortion.
How so?
Because some clinics didn't meet the stringent standards and were closed down.
Well, don't you think that a health clinic doing a procedure should have a certain level of care for women? Of course.
Well, I'm asking you because obviously some people say the rules were too stringent.
Look, the rule—
I'm pointing out what critics have said.
No, let's be very clear. This is not an act I'm looking for that create different rules for different providers, whether you're Planned Parenthood or an abortion provider or just a hospital. This is about making sure the rules are the same across the board for everybody, whether you're talking about an abortion provider or basic health care.
So what would those rules look like here in New Hampshire?
I think a lot of the rules that are in place for existing facilities can simply be translated over and making sure that they are applicable to all facilities. And if those rules need to be adjusted a little bit, that's fine. I'm willing to look at that. But again, the rules need to be adjusted for everybody. It's about fairness and safety for women's health care.
And you remain pro-choice.
Well, of course I remain pro-choice. Mm-hmm. I've always been pro-choice.
Yeah. Well, I was pointing that out for the audience.
Politics doesn't dictate my personal value system.
You did vote for a Planned Parenthood contract that came before the executive council.
I voted for four of them, actually.
Will you continue to support taxpayer funding for Planned Parenthood?
We have to look at what that looks like going forward. So there's a couple different aspects to get into the nuances. There is a federal a program that right now Planned Parenthood applies for directly in the state, I believe. There's a state contract which has come up before us. As we look at the Medicaid rules and options that we have as a state when the federal government kind of pushes back onto New Hampshire and allows us to design our own system, I think that's going to give us a lot of flexibility. One thing I've always said, and I maintain, we need to have more options, right? So in my district, with what we call these funds, only Planned Parenthood stood up to bid on the contract. I want more people to bid on the contract. If Planned Parenthood wants to bid, they can bid too. That's fine. But we need to provide options for people. That's what this gets down to, whether we're talking about mental health or women's health care or education. Options are always a good thing, and I will never support anyone trying to railroad or monopolize one contract in any single area. Options are a great thing for the people of the state, and it helps lower cost and provide flexibility for individuals.
And how do you incentivize those options?
Well, one thing to do, as I did before, I'll keep reaching out to a lot of the providers directly. I think we need to make the application process much simpler. I mean, if you've seen this request for proposal, it's so complex. It's so onerous. Some of these smaller healthcare providers that could be providing these women's healthcare programs, which are very important, they simply don't have the staff, the grant writers, if you will, to get involved in this very lengthy process, the thousands of dollars in legal fees you got to pay a lawyer to cut through that process. Small providers can't do that, right? So we need to simplify it. And yet when you simplify it for the provider, it's likely the more will jump into the mix, and we can have a system that, again, just gives flexibility to everybody.
You now have two of our neighboring states, Massachusetts, and it looks like Maine, moving forward with legalized marijuana. Are you concerned or watching what happens in Massachusetts and Maine to see if legalization is something that could work here in New Hampshire?
Well, we'll definitely look at it. I don't think we're ready for that step right now. I mean, we're barely taken our initial steps in medical marijuana here. Looking at what happens in Massachusetts or Maine or Colorado or other states that have taken those steps is going to be very important. What were the unintended consequences? What were the dynamics? What were the pros and cons? That's always just a smart thing to do. We don't need to be the first one out of the gate. We're not ready for that clearly. So I'll definitely be looking at that, but clearly not something we want to take on right now.
Not something to prioritize or think
about.
Oh,
no, no, yeah. No.
During the campaign, you raised concerns about the state's voting laws and voter fraud. What types of election laws do you want to see changed?
Well, I've never been a big fan of same-day voter registration. Most states don't have it. There's a reason, right? Because it can cause problems. There's no doubt about
that. Would you support a bill to do away with it?
With same-day voter registration? Yes, I would. I would. Look, we have the first-in-the-nation primary. That is a great responsibility. We just need our laws tighter. It's not about fraud and a rigged system and all that kind of nonsense. It's really about just making sure that our rules are clear, that they're unambiguous, and that people can believe that as a full-time resident of the state of New Hampshire, your vote isn't being, let's say, watered down by someone who's kind of, drive-through voting or drive-by voting or whatever it is. We just need to kind of modernize the system, if you will. And most states have done that.
Is there a lot of evidence of that happening, though? A lot of evidence of fraud?
Of same-day voter of fraud?
Yeah.
No, I don't want to start saying that there's clear evidence of fraud. Fraud would imply that. See, this is where, again, I'm not saying that that people are doing things illegally, but the system allows for so much flexibility in gray area in terms of who's a resident, who's not, how long have you been here, same-day voter, what are the checks and balances? It's just about getting that into place. So I know the Democrats like to say, oh, it's about fraud. It's not necessarily about fraud. It's about just having a system that I think right now is just too loose. Most states have gone this route. Why shouldn't we? I mean, it's just about providing viability to our system. It's very important.
What about early voting? Many states go into that now.
I'm not a fan of it. I'd be willing to look at it. I'll be willing to look at everything, but I'm not a fan of early voting, so to say. I think that, again, dilutes the process and can encourage folks casting their vote before all the information is before them. I mean, that's why we have a voting day, right? So all the candidates have the time, and they know they have the time to get their message out, to make it clear. And so people are on the on when they all vote on the same day, you know that every candidate's had the same opportunity to interact with those voters, get them the information they need, so the voter's making an informed decision.
The state has a mandate to get to 25% of renewable energy sources by 2025, the 25 by 25 mm-hmm. initiative. Do you support that goal?
Well, look, I'm an environmental engineer. I've worked on renewable energy projects directly, and I'm proud to say that I probably bring more expertise in renewable energy than any governor before me. I've been very supportive of a lot of renewable energy projects. Hydro, wind, solar, all of these have to be part of our portfolio. I know I've been criticized because I've said no to some solar projects before, but you have to understand, when you say no to a bad project, it isn't that you just cast the money away and you don't do anything. My reason for saying no was always because I believe that we can take those funds and invest them in more efficient renewable energy, right? We need a portfolio that meets our needs as a state. Should we have the same solar standards as Arizona? Well, maybe not. I mean, it kind of makes sense that, you know, that solar might work better for them. Maybe hydro or biomass works better for us. So these are things I'm going to continue to look at, making sure that whatever we do, we have a renewable energy portfolio that meets our needs, and we're setting standards that are in goals that are actually realistic. Can we get 25 by 25? I don't know. I got to be honest. It would be very tough right now. I'm not saying we can't do it. It's a noble goal, but it would be very tough to do it. My priority is making sure that as we move forward to that goal, we're doing it in the most efficient, effective way. And that way we have a better chance of reaching the goal. It's not about the number having more projects than other people. It's about making sure that the dollars you're investing are getting the biggest and best impact in terms of the social and environmental dynamics.
But you're not married to that idea of 25 by 25.
No, I'm not married to it. No.
Would you support withdrawing New Hampshire from the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative?
Lord knows, people know I have not been a big fan of RGGI. Now, to pull out of RGGI on our own without other New England states doing it doesn't make much sense for us, frankly. So I'm looking at doing it, and I'll talk to the other governors about whether they're interested in doing it. And it's not about, again, pulling out and just not participating in programs that can provide great environmental benefit. I mean, providing a better environment is my career. I mean, that's what I do. It's simply about is RGGI the best program to get us to those goals? Maybe it is, maybe it isn't. So I think we have to look at it, and I just think that, I mean, RGGI was started, boy, many, many years ago. A lot of the hopes of it just haven't come to fruition in terms of the return on that investment. Is there a better way to invest to achieve those goals? Maybe. I just want to be open to it.
You come into the governorship with Republican control in both houses. Are you looking forward to working with Democrats across the aisle? Do you feel like there's some issues that will be easy for you to work with?
Look, we have 175 Democrat House members. We have 10 state senators, at least 10, maybe even 11, that are going to be Democrats. So I take pride in the fact I don't burn bridges. I don't believe in it. I think it'd be hard-pressed to find anyone that I don't get along with or haven't established a good personal relationship with. Something that John Lynch taught me early on was you can have good, tough political decisions, conversations and debates, but you leave that on the table, right? You really have to be able to walk away, have good personal relationships, knowing that you're going to have to work together on other issues another day. So I take great pride in the fact that my first 6 years as an executive counselor, I've really tried to achieve that, and I look forward to working with everyone, Democrat, Republican, Independent. I just want the best ideas on the table. I don't care where they come from. I really don't. My skill set is bringing the best and the brightest into the room, put those ideas on the table, and have real action behind our words and move forward and find compromise where you need to find compromise.
I want to go back a little bit to when we were talking about business development and the economy. The state's unemployment rate dipped to 2.8% last month. It is now the lowest in the nation. How do you improve upon an economy that other states probably look at with some envy?
In terms of the unemployment rate, it is incredibly low. And that's a good thing. There's no doubt about it. It's a bad thing in that we have our workforce issue, right? One of the reasons it's low is we are losing our younger workers. We're losing a younger workforce that are walking out to either Boston or New York or, frankly, Idaho or the Carolinas. These are where our young workers are going right now. So we have to provide better opportunity here. We have to provide, we have a good wage structure. I mean, we have some of the highest per capita income in the country. here in New Hampshire. That's something to also take great pride in. But there's always opportunity to bring new businesses in, to provide incentives to retain those younger workers. Are you going to get much lower than 2.8 unemployment? No, you're really not. If anything, we need to, we obviously don't want that to rise too rapidly, but you do need to bring more better jobs in here, and you got to start providing incentives for younger workers to be retained.
Now, you are going to be stepping down from Waterville Valley, although your family will remain involved in the operation of the mountain. You know, going forward, how do you put up that firewall between you and some business interests when it comes to
Sure. So I will be completely resigning my role, both on the board of directors and as the chief executive officer, as of December 31st. And I walk away from the business completely. My family's still involved in the business, but that's, you know, my family's involved in lots of different things, as are other representatives and members and elected officials here in the state. And the thing that we have in the state, which I think we do well, is we disclose. We disclose everything in terms of what our financial interests are, and we recuse ourselves when appropriate. We have ethics committees and everything to make sure that everything is done well and in line, and we'll keep with that process.
Governor-elect Chris Sununu, thanks for the time.
Thank you, guys. Anytime.